Luke. Luke.
Ben?
You will listen to the Wampa's Lair podcast.
Podcast?
There you will hear your hosts, Carl LeClaire and Jason Hunt, as they discuss all things Star Wars. So join the conversation and hang out. Oh, and watch out for Wampas.
Hello and welcome back to another exciting episode of the Wampa's Lair podcast. This is episode number 166, Crazy Old Wizards. I am, as always, one of your hosts, Jason Hunt, and with me, the Unkar plot to my Watto, we have Carl LeClaire.
Oh, you just pegged me. Simon pegged me. Oh, man. Oh, see, I actually liked Watto. I mean, as much as you can like a character like Watto. But yeah, right. Unkar plot is a button. Nugget.
He's obnoxious.
That's mine!
Oh, Jason, are you feeling good that you saw The Force Awakens this morning?
Yes, I am. It was great.
It makes everything better.
I've now seen Force Awakens 6 times in the theater, and yesterday I bought the novelization and the young adult book Before the Awakening, which has short stories about our main characters from The Force Awakens, what they were doing before The Force Awakens. So I cannot wait to get into that.
Can't wait to read what Rey was doing scavenging. Oh, it's going to be so fun. Be prepared to be let down with The Force Awakens novel. So yeah. I haven't touched it in like 2 weeks because it's so boring, in my opinion.
Really?
Most people have been let down by it, to be honest. Alan Dean Foster just isn't a good writer, I don't think. I don't know. We're coming off of the era of amazing prequel novels. The prequel novels were all phenomenal. The original trilogy novels are nothing special, I don't think. It's been a long time. But yeah, the Force Awakens novel, I've only read like 45 pages of it. But I don't feel compelled to go back anytime soon. Maybe seeing it in theaters and I'm like missing it, like that'll be a nice refresher.
Yeah, maybe since you're still doing the whole oh my gosh in the theater experience right now, maybe that's why it hasn't grabbed you at the moment.
Yeah,
because it's like, why would I read about it when I can just go see it in the theater?
Precisely. Excuse me.
Exquisite. So what are we talking about today, Carl?
Oh, so we're doing kind of like a follow-up episode from our last episode. So last episode we discussed kind of our new big heroes, so and their call to adventure. So we looked at Luke's, Anakin's, and Rey's. So today we're going to kind of look at the folks that kind of invite them on their adventures. So we're going to be looking at Qui-Gon, Obi-Wan, and Maz Kanata, and we'll mention Han briefly. And why we're not putting him as the mainstay in this discussion. Yeah, we thought it'd be fun to kind of, you know, obviously the hero's journey is prevalent in all the Star Wars trilogies. So, you know, it's easy to focus on the hero, but what about those, the crazy old coots that invite them into that adventure? So that's what we're kind of looking at in today's episode.
Yes. But before we get there, we get to do one of our polls again. And I have to say our Larians turned out in the best way possible for this poll because I posted it this morning.
Yeah.
And we have over 20 responses to the poll. Of course, that poll being which one word would you use to describe Return of the Jedi, which I'm super excited to find out what everybody wanted to say because it is my favorite of the movies. Still. But let's jump right into this. On Facebook, our buddy Jazz says cathartic. Michael Wallace, furry. Obviously, Ewoks and Chewbacca. Brian V. Klein says celebration. Ubaidullah Abdul Malik says culmination. Adam J. Taylor, heartbreaking. Kyle Taylor says, since I missed the last poll, for Empire I'll say carbonite, and for Jedi I'll say best. I like you, Kyle. J-Dash Munier, I hope I pronounced that right, says, Han, old buddy, don't let me down. Jessica Baker says, I say prevail, and my son Jack says tense. We love TWL, short for the Wampus Lair Podcast. Thank you, Jessica. And it's kind of cool that Jessica and her son are listening together. That's cool.
That is cool.
Anyway, sorry. I've got more. Lawrence Trujillo says Emperor. Kyle Avery, Kyle Baca says Triumphant. Jordan Paris, Heroic. David Furr, Yubnub. Jeffrey Fishbach, Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. I approve. Calvin Bigelow, Redemptive. Joey Letson yells, Ben! Which is an inside joke from my trip to Disneyland with Joey and Kyle. And then he says, sorry, I meant Redemption. And then on Twitter, we got several responses as well. At Stephanie says, fun. At Balls in Play, Redemption. Seems to be a common theme. At Lowry Neal says, yub. Also a common theme, apparently. Common theme, not Coleman. Anyway, sorry. At Clark Kent 0019, Triumph. The rebellion over the Empire, the light side over the dark, and the Jedi over the Sith. And finally, at Goldflight 3, which is our buddy Lenny Klein, says fulfillment. So there you have it. And Carl, What do you think about this? This is the last of these polls that you and I will not be responding to.
I know. I'm very excited. I'm very excited to play with the next poll. I have been poll-less.
Poll-less. Yes.
Poll-less been... Massa. Okay.
There you go, folks. Star Wars humor at its
finest? Worst. Oh, yeah.
At its worst. Oh, by the way, sorry. I meant to show you this before we started recording, but have you seen my new shirt?
I have not.
Okay.
Oh, it's Rebel. It's from a Rebel shirt. Rebels. Star Wars Rebels from Disney XD.
Yes, I got it at Disneyland. So.
Oh, nice.
Yes. It's got a... For those of you, I'm showing Kyle a shirt on Skype on an audio podcast. Sorry. It's got...
It's like those stand-up comedy CDs you listen to when they're doing like a physical joke and you're like, what?
Right. And everybody's laughing hysterically and you're like, I want to know what he's doing. Yeah. But no, the shirt is a red shirt and it's got a Rebels-style Stormtrooper helmet sort of spray painted, dink dink, on top of it, with Sabine's, you know, circle with a line through it, going over the helmet, and Rebel spray painted underneath it in like a stencil, and it's really cool. So I was like, yes, I can show my allegiance to the good side with this shirt.
Rebel scum.
I am. I am the Rebel scum. And proud of it. Carl?
Yeah?
Our podcast is full of tangents, I must say.
I disagree. Next tangent, please. I mean...
Okay, our topic. How about we just jump to that?
All right, we can do that, if you insist.
It's kind of what we're here to talk about, so maybe we should at least mention it.
Yes. Well, let's start by talking about everyone's favorite Jedi, Qui-Gon Jinn.
I mean, he's a pretty cool Jedi.
Carl, only Sith deal in absolutes. Whoops. you know, I mean, I think Qui-Gon, though, for sure, no matter how many people have qualms with the Phantom Menace, almost everybody enjoys Qui-Gon's character.
Yeah, I would agree.
He's great.
He's kind of the standout character in the movie, which is kind of surprising because he dies.
Yeah, and true.
It's, you know... Star Wars did something slightly risky in the fact that one of their primary characters, someone who really drives the whole plot of the movie along, dies at the end. And he sort of has to pass it along to someone who is a little less involved in the movie, Obi-Wan and Anakin. You know, it's really interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
But anyway, that's not exactly what we're talking about, Qui-Gon about. So let's jump into what we're really focusing on.
Yes.
Sorry, I'm rambling.
No, you're not. It's fine. Like we said, we're going to kind of look at how they kind of encounter the new hero and how they go about kind of inviting them into that journey. Because, again, you know, that's the first, pretty much the first big step in the hero's journey is there's usually, you know, according to Joseph Campbell, there's an encounter with a wise elder of some kind, you know, and they're going to be the ones that invite the hero to embark on this journey. And I think that the way Qui-Gon is kind of presented to us in The Phantom Menace, especially shortly before, well, all the way leading up to where, you know, he ends up on Tatooine and bumps into Anakin. What's so important about Qui-Gon's character, which I think The Phantom Menace does a great job setting up in the beginning part of the film, is that this is a guy who follows the will of the Force. He is being guided by the living Force. And I think, you know, that there's that great little line that he says to Jar Jar when they're kind of going through the planet core. You know, he's like, where are we so going? Don't worry, the Force will guide us.
Oh, Maxi Big the Force.
Well, yes, it is.
Well, it smells stink whiff.
Yes. We're losing power.
Oh, no. We're so dying here.
Oh. We're not in trouble yet.
What yet?
And I'm going to stop there because that's not what we're talking about.
But yeah, no, but you know, we see obviously that Qui-Gon is somebody who's kind of very much in touch with this living Force, and that's what kind of guides him in what he does. And it's really neat because then when he kind of stumbles upon Anakin, and you know, Anakin invites them into the home, you know, up to this point he probably is just thinking Anakin's just a nice kid. But it's not until they kind of sit down and have that meal that he recognizes something unique about Anakin, because Anakin's talking about pod race, you know, I'm the only human that can do it. You must have Jedi reflexes if you raise pods.
Exactly.
And then Anakin recognizes, he's like, you are a Jedi Knight, aren't you? And Qui-Gon kind of notices that there's something special about this kid. And, you know, I mean, just that realistic ability that Anakin clearly has to be able to race pods. So Qui-Gon recognizes there's something about this kid. There's something intuitively within him that's probably the Force that makes him kind of special. And then even to cap it off, you know, at that end of that scene, you have Anakin who seems, you know, he's this very innocent, altruistic character, because all he wants to do is participate in the Boonta Eve race so that he can help these people he's basically just met.
Right.
But, you know, yeah, so I mean, that's kind of the setup for it, right? Like, Qui-Gon stumbles upon Anakin, but he's, again, like, he's somebody who's so in touch with the living Force and kind of what's coming up. He's so zen-like. He's very much, you know, mindful of the moment that he's able to recognize Anakin. You know, I actually had Phantom Menace on in the background while I was at work today, and I was thinking about this because I've always disliked the idea that Qui-Gon finds Anakin. I always wanted it to be Obi-Wan.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's almost better that it's Qui-Gon who does. This is a tangent, but I don't care.
Explain it.
Yeah.
Explain.
I'm trying to remember why I was thinking that. Because I had it like really good in my head.
and you didn't write it down.
No, I know. So I can't tell you right now, but if it comes back to me, I will share. But I just remember for the first time thinking like, oh, it makes sense actually that Qui-Gon finds him.
But you see, I'm going to go ahead and take it from here for a minute. But yeah, he does follow the will of the Force, and he's very in tune with the way the Force moves through life and the way that it's not always just a straight line. Whereas the Jedi Order right now, especially during this point in time, is very bureaucratic, and they stay within their limits and they have their rules and they're very straightforward and they do these specific things, and this is what Jedi do. They're very set in their ways right now, and because Qui-Gon doesn't necessarily follow the strict dictates of the Council, but rather the will and the flow of the living Force and where it takes him, he's considered a maverick. And so it's not surprising that when he ends up on this backwater planet trying to find parts to get them to Coruscant, that he runs into someone with enormous Force potential and who Qui-Gon seems to believe very firmly in the prophecy of the Chosen One. Whereas it seems like the prophecy of the Chosen One is just this grand prophecy that has been passed down from generation to generation for thousands of years within the Jedi Temple as sort of this thing that may eventually come to pass if there's ever a need for it. Qui-Gon believes very strongly that this is a reality, mm-hmm. and that in encountering Anakin, especially after, you know, testing his theory by, you know, testing Anakin's blood to find out what his Midichlorian count would be, and knowing that he's able to win the pod race, especially after confirming his suspicions, he believes that Anakin is this chosen one. Yeah. And that it was the will of the Force that brought him to Tatooine. And so he will not leave without Anakin.
Right.
Because it would be going against the will of the Force.
Yeah. And that's a great point, you know. I mean, and that's the thing. Something about Qui-Gon's character, he's kind of sly and sneaky to a certain degree. And not in a malicious way, but, you know, think about it. You know, he the way he kind of gets Anakin's blood, what are you doing? Testing your blood for infections? No, you're not. You know, he's fine. It's a scrape. But, you know, but he is. Like, he's just – he's not going to say why right there. But it is. It's very interesting that, like, Qui-Gon is – you know, and, you know, now he realizes this kid was born – he potentially conceived by the Force itself, right? Like, he doesn't have a father. So Qui-Gon has all of this – kind of evidence right now pointing at the reality that this might actually be the fulfillment of this prophecy that any Jedi is probably going to be aware of, especially a Jedi master like Qui-Gon. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but he wants, but he's going one step further to even further confirm it, which is the Midichlorian check, you know, and that kind of, it's the even more hard and fast concrete evidence that there is something unique about this boy. And it is, like you said, Jason, it's clearly the will of the Force, so he's not going to leave without him. Which also leads to something also very intriguing about Qui-Gon is he's going to start gambling now, really. You know, I mean, he
will use any means necessary to fulfill what he believes the will of the Force is.
Right.
Any means necessary, which puts him in that sort of gray area amongst the Jedi, and why he's considered a maverick and why he will never be on the Jedi Council is because he's willing to bend the rules in order to achieve the will of the Force.
Exactly.
Whereas the Council will not at this point.
Right, right. I mean, you look at it even, you know, right when they're when he's with Watto, and Watto has the little chance cube, and Qui-Gon uses the Force to ensure that it's, you know,
goes his way.
Yeah, exactly.
You won the small toss, Outlander.
But you won't win the race, so that makes little difference.
Thank you. All sorts you of Phantom Menace love tonight.
There is.
But yeah, so, and that's the, you know, and that's the thing, Qui-Gon is, now that he's aware of who he thinks Anakin is, he's going to stop at nothing to bring him with him. And he does. He succeeds in that. And, you know, he does. He makes that invitation to Anakin, which we kind of talked about in our last episode, which Anakin is delighted to do. But Qui-Gon is a good inviter, I guess, because he's also, he paints out for Anakin the reality of the difficulty behind it, you know, because Anakin's so excited at first, like, it's what I've always dreamed of. And he's like, Anakin, training to be a Jedi is it's hard work. And even if you succeed, it's a difficult life. He's making it very clear that this is the difficult path, you know, but which is great. Like, so he's not going to
manipulate
Anakin. Yeah. And he's not going to manipulate Anakin in any way. And the reality, you know, is, can mom come? Well, I tried, but I couldn't, you know? Yeah. So Qui-Gon's very honest to Anakin.
Yeah. And it's interesting. Qui-Gon is one of the most hands-on of those that gives the call of our heroes to their adventure, because Qui-Gon is intensely hands-on in ensuring Anakin's freedom. So he has that opportunity to answer the call of adventure. And, you know, he does the gambling, and he, you know, gets Watto to release Anakin and sells the pod for Anakin and his mother Shmi to help support them. But he is very hands-on and almost pulling strings in order to ensure that Anakin has every opportunity to actually accept the call before he officially gives it. And it's very quick from the time he gives the invitation and Anakin leaves, because he's already set everything up just perfectly so that if Anakin says yes, they're ready to go.
Good point.
He's very hands-on.
Yeah.
Which is kind of surprising, you know, which is kind of different than the other two that we're going to really talk about.
Right.
So.
Right. Yeah, and, you know, and we see that, you know, Qui-Gon is committed to that invitation all the way up to the end of the film, right? Because even after the Council tests Anakin and they warrant him not worthy of being trained. Qui-Gon steps forward and says, I'm going to do it then. And even his dying wish is that Anakin be trained as a Jedi, because he is confident that this is the chosen one. So that's the, you know, that's all of these, all three of these characters we're going to talk about are unique in their own way. But I think Qui-Gon is, well, he's unique in this way, in that he is.
He's incredibly devoted to the call.
Yes.
And he is incredibly, what's the word I'm looking for? I don't know. His role in this, he has no doubts about.
Yeah.
And he's going to do that to the best of his ability.
Right. Precisely. Yeah.
He knows where this is in the story, and he's going to play his part to its fullest. He probably was not surprised at the outcome, right. To be perfectly honest. So, while he would have wished for a different one, he probably wasn't surprised at the one that occurred.
yeah. Well, and I think, you know, for me, like the last time when we did our last episode, each of the heroes we looked at is I kind of tried to round out kind of a promise that they made when pursuing their call to some degree. And from the way I put together my notes for today's episode is kind of what was kind of the hope of the inviter, right? Like what were they hoping to get out of inviting each of these individual heroes on their journey? Mm-hmm. And I think it's very clear that obviously what Qui-Gon is hoping for is that Anakin will become the one who brings balance to the Force. So, mm-hmm. And that's a huge concept for Qui-Gon that he sincerely is convicted with, and he'll see that through to the end. So that's his hope, is that Anakin will indeed bring balance to the Force.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, those Anakin are his dying words.
And that Anakin will grow to fill that role of the Chosen One.
So. Yes. Yes.
All right. Excellent. I think we should move on to Obi-Wan Kenobi. Obi-Wan.
Hey, can you give me that, what was that old way you used to do Obi-Wan, but you did it as that character from the Muppets or whatever?
Obi-Wan.
Oh, the Swedish chef?
Yeah.
Obi-Wan Kenobi.
There it is.
Thank there you are.
The Swedish chef.
There you go. Swedish chef. All right. Anyways.
But yes, Obi-Wan, now Qui-Gon's apprentice, who messes everything up with Anakin. Just kidding. It's not Obi-Wan's fault. It's a little of Obi-Wan's fault, though. So now we have Obi-Wan, who's in a very different role than Qui-Gon, very different circumstances, because Obi-Wan pledges that the rest of his life will be watching over Luke. You know, that's kind of what his life's mission is going to be at the end of Revenge of the Sith. And he and Yoda make it very clear that until, you know, the Force kind of dictates, they're going to kind of stay out of the way, right? Mm-hmm. So, and it's interesting because, again, it's this attachment to the living Force that Obi-Wan is going to cultivate, obviously, in his years of exile. And he's going to wait on that until the living Force kind of brings Luke to him and the time is right. And, you know, from, it's in the radio drama, I think it's even in the novel, but there are hints from the stories that obviously Luke has encountered Ben Kenobi before, mm-hmm. but it seems like every time they've had that encounter, it's not really been the right time for Obi-Wan to be like, hey, you should come be a Jedi, because Luke's just not ready. So right. It's not until we get to, obviously, the events of A New Hope that Obi-Wan is going to take any real action. Because, again, I think it's really neat because it's a callback to really what his master was, and obviously what his master taught him in his years of exile, is how to commune with the living Force and be in touch with that. And it's going to basically take a princess in distress for Obi-Wan to recognize, okay, the time is right. It's time for me to make the invitation of Luke. The difference is right, like he doesn't stumble upon Luke. He's just waiting. Qui-Gon's is right. Unique because he's kind of stumbles upon it. It comes out of nowhere. But for Obi-Wan, it's something that he's well aware of, but he's just waiting on. He's got to wait until the time is right.
Yeah, no, definitely. He knows what his mission is here. He knows he will be giving this invitation at some point. The only question is a matter of when and not if for Obi-Wan. So he just has to be aware and open and listening to the will of the Force to know when the time is right. And you're right. It takes sort of a message from across the stars to fall into Luke's lap to really present the opportunity, because it's interesting. Not only is it going to be a call to adventure for Luke, but it's sort of a call to action for Obi-Wan at this point. And there's no way that he's going to be able to deny the request from Leia. And so he's going to be leaving, so he has to make the invitation now.
Right.
But the great thing about that is not only is it his last chance to give that invitation, but it's also the perfect time to give the invitation because of what this message from this princess opens up with Luke. And so it's really kind of interesting because he's been waiting for so long to give this invitation, to see Luke begin the path to become a Jedi, that I feel like he takes it very well when Luke says, no, I can't leave. You know, and he simply says, well, you must do what you feel is right, of course. You know, and I feel Obi-Wan must have really, really been taking to heart Qui-Gon's teachings on the living force out there in the desert, because he's got to have a lot of faith that the force is going to take care of this situation for him, because he's not going to be like, no, but really, you should come. This is your last chance, your only chance at this sort of, you know, adventure. He doesn't try and talk Anakin into going with him. He doesn't try to mind trick him into coming with him or anything. He's like, all right, you don't want to come right now, fine, but just saying, there's this opportunity, you know. So, which is interesting. He takes it rather well.
Yeah, he really does, you know. But even that like little line he gives to him, it's kind of a little bit heavy, because you do what you feel is right. Because I think Obi-Wan is able to clearly see into, you know, see through you. We can,
right?
You know, I think he knows what's obviously going on inside of Luke. Luke is somebody who wants to get off this planet, who wants to go make something of his life. Obi-Wan is well aware of all of that. That potential and that inherent force ability within Luke that he wants to invite out, but he's not going to force it, because you can never force somebody to start that journey, because it has to be their choosing. So Obi-Wan does. He finally says, okay, this, you know, things are coming to a head in the galaxy. Like this, you know, this 19, 20 years I've been waiting is finally, you know, coming to a head, and something's got to give, you know. Leia is in trouble. This rebellion that's trying to defeat this evil empire is in trouble. And here is this kid who has the ability to help change the entire course of these events. It's time for me to make that invitation. Mm-hmm. And you're right. Like, Luke doesn't. And I think even Obi-Wan saying that, you know, you do what you feel is right. I think Obi-Wan is hoping that that question does kind of penetrate deep within Luke and really does kind of sink into what he really wants and what he really should be going after and change that. And I think that's exactly right. Like, Obi-Wan is trusting that the living force is going to work this out somehow. And it does.
It does. And it's also that statement, you must do what you feel is right, of course. It's very penetrating. You know, it's at the same time completely disarming and intensely penetrating all at once. Mm-hmm. You know, he goes, fine, I won't push the issue. But what is it that you really want?
Right.
And that's got to be sticking around with Luke. You know, the whole drive that they're taking on the way back before they run across the Sandcrawler, you know, Luke's got to be thinking about that question. You know, what do I really want?
Yeah.
So it's interesting. That question is a very double-edged sword, because it takes away the pressure from Obi-Wan to try and convince Luke to change his mind, but it makes Luke address his own mind and really discover what it is he really wants.
Yeah, precisely. And you know, when Luke does come back from his, you know, the destroyed homestead and stuff, you know, Obi-Wan is, he doesn't necessarily like prod anymore. All he says was, there's nothing you could have done had you been there. You'd have been killed too. He gives it that perspective of, you know, as soon as you guys took these droids into your home, that homestead was doomed. You know, the Empire was hunting for it. And I think Obi-Wan recognizes that it was good to some degree. Like, the Force led Luke away from the farm so that he could encounter Obi-Wan, so that he could be away from the hell that was about to rain upon them. You know, mm-hmm. So, and that's where Luke finally has the freedom to then say, like, well, okay, I'm going to go with you and become a Jedi. And Obi-Wan welcomes him. But I think it's really important that, you know, Obi-Wan has made the invitation. Luke has refused it. But now that Luke has that ability, all Obi-Wan does, though, is he offers a comforting perspective, if you will. He doesn't hug mm-hmm. him and be like, it's going to be okay, child. But he does. He just says, you know, there's nothing you could have done. He's trying to tell Luke, you don't have to feel guilty. And you definitely can now, like, now you have the ability to really respond to that call I gave you not so long ago.
The interesting thing, though, is he doesn't, you know, reiterate the invitation.
Mm-hmm.
No, he's given the invitation once. He doesn't need to give it again. He doesn't need to go, okay, so you're ready to go now? You know, he doesn't do that. He doesn't do, you know.
Well, they're dead. Let's go.
Right. He's like, well, I guess you're stuck with me, so might as well get, you know, come on this journey now. Luke is the one who revisits the invitation, and he says, you know, I want to come with you to Alderaan. I want to learn the ways of the Force and become a Jedi like my father. He's now fully committed to that invitation that Obi-Wan gave him earlier. And so all Obi-Wan has to do now is just begin the training and start Luke down the path to becoming a Jedi. And it's almost as if at that moment, Obi-Wan's mission is essentially
complete. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. You know, this moment he's been waiting for almost 20 years now has finally come to pass.
Right. And if you think about it, you know, if you want to do some speculating real quick, you know, had they not ended up being, you know, sucked into a tractor beam on the Death Star, you know, it's possible that Obi-Wan may have gone with Luke to Dagobah at some point to enhance his training, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's quite probable that Obi-Wan, to some degree, wouldn't feel completely capable of training Luke on his own, in spite of what happened to Anakin. So he may have wanted to take him with him to Dagobah at some point, or even more, go get Leia too. We don't know. Yeah. You know, I'm just speculating for the fun of it.
I mean, the other thing is, you know, is even if Obi-Wan had begun the training with Luke, Yoda is such a revered figure in the ways of the Jedi that I think Obi-Wan would have wanted to take him there anyways to get the sort of more spiritual, mystical, historical perspective on the Jedi anyways. Right. Because that's sort of what Yoda embodies at this point.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Obi-Wan is definitely more practical when it comes to his view and application of the Force, I suppose. Not view, but his application of the Force. He's a lot more practical and pragmatic.
Yeah.
Where Yoda has become much more meditative. Even more so than he was in the prequels.
Right. Absolutely.
So.
Yeah. And I think, you know, and that's like you kind of said, as soon as Luke leaves with him and they head off to Mos Eisley, Obi-Wan has completed his mission, his end of the bargain, if you will, is he has invited Luke along and he's going to start him, you know, on those first steps into the larger world. and obviously it's clear that Obi-Wan has a clear hope for Obi-Wan and inviting Luke on this journey. And his hope is that Luke does indeed become a Jedi. And more than that, undoes what Sidious and Vader have created in the galaxy. You know, Obi-Wan Right. has some hefty intentions for Luke. But what's really interesting is we never hear him say them, which is extremely important too.
Right.
You know, which would have been awful if he's training Luke and he's like, by the way, like, you're going to have to defeat Vader and the Emperor because you're the only one who's going to be powerful enough to do it. Be like, wait, what? Talk about pressure on your training. You know what I mean? So
say that one more time.
Yeah.
You know,
it's yeah.
Like, too much pressure.
Right. Right. And it's interesting that he does give Luke that certain point of view about his father, that he was killed by Darth Vader. Because he does, in that way, he puts a seed in Luke, though, to hate Darth Vader, to want to vanquish his father's murderer. So it's just sometimes curious to think about when would he have told Luke that Vader was his father? Would he have, too? You know what I mean?
Who yeah. knows? That is an interesting question to think about.
Yeah. But he does. He gives, in that little conversation with him, though, when he's telling Luke his point of view to family history, he is kind of setting Luke up, though, to have a goal in mind for his Jedi training, is to vanquish his father's murderer. So
yeah. And then, and of course, very, you know, in a fashion much like Merlin and King Arthur, Obi-Wan ends up sacrificing himself and, you know, leaving Luke to have to continue the journey down the path on his own strength. Of course, Obi-Wan has the added benefit of becoming a Force ghost and being able to return to help enhance and assist in Luke's further training as a Jedi. But, you know, he's taken away, and Luke has to find the strength and the ability to continue down the path he's chosen on his own, at least for a time. Mm-hmm. So, and yeah. Obi-Wan seems to be okay with that.
Right. He does. he's very much resigned to that reality.
Yeah, indeed. Cool.
Let's get into the inviter of Rey. you know, because it's,
yeah.
For a lot of folks, I mean, it's very, you know, apparent that Han is the new Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon character in The Force Awakens. You know, I mean, he's the one who dies, kind of like they both did. He is the one who's going to pass the torch, but I don't think he's the one that invites Rey on her adventure or on her hero's journey.
No.
He does make an invitation to her. I mean, he invites her to be on board his ship, but he's not inviting out her full potential. And I think that's the difference. And as a huge
Han is sort of the one that provides the circumstances for Rey to be invited, right. But it's not his job to invite her on that journey for her full potential.
Right. Good.
He's got much more of a important moment coming up with his son later on in the movie. That's more his role in the whole story of Force Awakens. But Han does lay the groundwork to get Rey to the point where she can have that invitation by connecting Rey with Maz Kanata.
Right. And real quick before we jump into the great Maz Kanata. No, it's just something I thought about is, you know, I think it was Chris Smith who said this, that, you know, when Maz does say to Han, you know, who's the girl? And then we go off camera to Finn, right? We don't know what Han's answer is. You know, Chris was speculating that Han does know who Rey is. He realizes, oh my gosh, this is Luke's daughter or something like that, right? Mm-hmm. If that's the case, and we won't know until the next film, if not later, but if that were the case, it might be interesting, though, that Han doesn't encourage her. It might be possible that Han doesn't encourage her to pursue Jedi training because look what happened to his own son, right? Like, you could think he's kind of Uncle Owen in it.
A bit, yeah.
You know, but that's clearly for speculation because we don't know. I don't know. And maybe somebody right now is listening to us and saying, no, Han is definitely the Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon of this movie, but I just don't see it because he doesn't make that concrete invitation that Maz Kanata makes. And like you said, Jason, I think Han is literally, he's the catalyst for that to come about. And he progresses, he brings her further along on her journey. But you know, it's not Han is not the one who's going to tell her about her opportunity to go become a hero, in a sense.
Right.
That's for Maz Kanata.
Exactly. And the great. Maz Kanata the Great. Yeah. I mean, she is an interesting character because she's got this castle, this, you know, dive that's full of all sorts of smugglers and merchants and, you know, not quite civilized types, but not uncivilized, not a hive of scum and villainy, but they're not, you know, it's not the Senate, you know, recreational area. But she's apparently, we don't know the whole history here because we don't know very much about her at all, but she's apparently very connected to the idea of the Force. She's not a Jedi. She's not someone who uses the Force in what we know as the more traditional sense. But she seems to know a whole lot about the Force, and she seems very connected to the Force because she goes into this whole discussion about, you know, the battle, the only one that ever matters is, you know, against the dark side. Mm-hmm. It's interesting, though, that she surrounds herself with the type of people that she does when what she's focused on is the only battle that ever matters, you know, in the universe is combating the dark side. I just find that kind of interesting. You know, maybe she's keeping herself shrouded from the dark side by all these types. I don't know. It's interesting.
Right.
But
yeah, and we don't know that these are all like villainous types, obviously.
No, just, I don't think they are.
They're just ruffians. yeah, you know, and I think that's an interesting point too. But I think it's also gotten to the point where, you know, in that very conversation, she talks about how the First Order shadow is spreading across the galaxy and we have to fight them, all of us, right? I think it's becoming more apparent to her now that the First Order is a real threat and the dark side is kind of the catalyst and it's constantly in the background moving behind the First Order. It's clearly what's pushing it forward. And now it's like she's saying, we got to stand up and do something about this.
Yeah. The funny thing, though, is that she's not looking to give this invitation at all.
No, she's like Qui-Gon in a sense.
Yeah, she's has no idea it's coming, you know, at least as far as we know. But while she has this very intense conversation with Finn at the table about his eyes and what she sees in him, and he leaves and Rey gets up to follow him to talk to him, it's only then that she turns directly to Han and says, "Who's the girl?" And you mentioned that earlier, but she's keyed in on who Rey is. Mm. She's like, there's something about her. Who is she?
Right.
And like you said, we don't know what Han says.
Exactly.
And that drives me nuts because I need to know. but obviously, by the time we next see Maz, she knows full well who Rey is. Probably more so than Rey does herself.
Right.
And Rey gets this vision that's provided by Luke's lightsaber that Maz has somehow, another story for another time.
Slash sequel,
right. that she's somehow had for years locked away in a box in her dungeons.
Mm. Yeah. I think that's the thing with Rey, you know. Maz Kanata. What I love about Maz Kanata is this is the first time we have had a character like this who's not clearly a Jedi. And it's our first ever non-Jedi Force-sensitive character we've ever had in the films. Well, I guess I take that back. Obviously, the Night Sisters and stuff.
They were in the Clone Wars, but not necessarily the films.
Good point. But yeah, you know, we have this character. She reminds me a lot of Qui-Gon to a certain degree in the sense that she is someone who is connected to the living Force because she's able to quickly respond to this new person who shows up. And, you know, something led her downstairs to find Rey. Whether it's something Han says or whether it's a whisper from the Force, we don't know. But we do know that while she's not a Jedi, she clearly knows the Force. She says that very clearly. And she's also in tune with it. And there actually was, I guess, there were two two. I don't know if they were filmed deleted scenes, but there were two scenes originally in the screenplay where Maz uses the Force to trick stormtroopers, like mind trick them.
Yeah.
And supposedly there's also a scene where some stormtroopers are like pursuing them through the dungeon before they come back outside, and Maz uses the Force to make like a pillar fall down on them.
Yeah.
So
no, that was watching an interview. That scene was actually in a cut of the movie before it was deleted.
Oh, good. So maybe we'll get
from
that
the final cut. So hopefully we'll see that on the right. Blu-ray.
Yeah, which would be great. But yeah, so it's really clear that Maz clearly is somebody, while not a Jedi, who knows the Force. And that's what's so cool, because when she goes down and encounters Rey, that's when the invitation happens. And what she's essentially saying is she's responding to what the Force is doing with Rey. And she's saying, you know, she tells her all the truth she needs to hear, that, you know, you don't need to go back to Jakku. Your life isn't there anymore. It's ahead of you. And it's attached to Luke. It's attached to Luke because, one, his lightsaber is calling to you. And two, he has something that he can offer to you. So again, like, Maz isn't the one who's going to do the training per se.
No.
So look at it. Even if we progress through these three characters that we've talked about, Qui-Gon is intending to. He's intending to handle everything with Anakin. Obi-Wan is intending to get Luke's journey started. Maz is simply pointing where to go. But that's still equally important. So Maz is saying, you know, take that lightsaber, and, you know, she doesn't say what to do with it, but I think what's implied by that is in that invitation, she's saying, take it and go find Luke.
Yeah. She's almost the guardian of Excalibur in a sense, you know?
Yeah.
Because she's got Luke's saber, and it's Luke's saber that ends up being this catalyst in Rey to give her the Force vision and provide that opportunity for Maz to give the actual invitation. And she's, you know, sort of the keeper of the hidden of the treasure map, right, in a sense, for Rey and her future. And she is so in tune with the Force, but not just the Force, but the good side, the light.
Right.
And she is,
right,
has a very, it appears, while not a conventional connection to the Force, but a very pure connection to the Force,
mm-hmm,
which is remarkable in someone who, you know, who's described as a pirate, you know?
Yeah. Right. I love that implication of her character. But also, too, I mean, remember, she also now realizes that they have a map to Luke. You know, that's what the BB-8 unit's for. That's why Han's like saying, you know, you got to get this to Leia. Everything's kind of coming ahead for Maz here. She recognizes what the Force is doing. And it's cool, too, because, you know, in that little scene where she says, close your eyes, the light, it's always been there. It will guide you. You know, and she closes her eyes. It's almost as if, to me, and again, this is my interpretation, but in that little scene there, just by her closing her eyes, she connects with the light, and it's guiding her. It's saying, okay, now tell Rey. She opens her eyes and says, the saber, take it. And Rey refuses it. And it's funny, too, because then Maz is like, oh, you know, like she kind of like mumbles for a second as Rey takes off. Because I don't think she expected that. I don't think she was expecting Rey to deny it.
No, because Maz has such a pure connection to the Force, she expects Rey to at least feel that in some sense, and Rey to respond to it the way that she does. Because she loves that connection. The connection fuels her and keeps her going and makes her feel alive with purpose, it appears. And this is my interpretation of Maz. And she's... You'll notice, though, Rey doesn't close her eyes in that situation.
Right.
I think Maz expected her to close her eyes and reach out with her. But she didn't. But Rey didn't. Mm. And so when Rey refuses it, it catches her by surprise, and she's left standing there, you know, awkwardly going, this is going to be great. And then she's just left standing there with the present in her hands, and Rey's running away. And she's like, but wait, never mind. You know, well, oops.
Yeah. know? Yeah. But and what's really cool, too, about Maz, too, is she doesn't necessarily give up, even though Rey takes off. And then obviously the First Order attacks. You know, they all go outside, and she says to Finn, Rey and BB-8, they need you, right? Like, she's even, like, saying, like, go find her. Like, get her back, make sure she goes where she needs to go.
Give her the saber.
Right.
She gives Finn the saber to give to Rey. And it's still one of the most amazing scenes in the movie when Rey finally gets the saber and is able to use it.
Right.
At the end of the movie, I love that scene so much.
I do too. I do too. But yeah,
but I'm curious to see what role Maz plays next, because she's got a role to play. I feel like having this interaction with Rey and being a part of this initial conflict between the First Order and the Resistance is going to tell Maz that she can't sit on the sidelines anymore. She's going to have to get involved somehow.
Yeah.
And so I'm just curious to see where that takes Maz next and what sort of role she plays next in that. Because I don't think it's not going to be the same. Because by the time Maz meets Rey again, Rey will have been training with Luke. And Luke will have been that mentor.
Right.
To Rey.
Right.
We're assuming anyways.
Yeah. But she's the essential... She's the essential first step, right? Mm-hmm. She is the one who says to Rey, take this. You have an adventure. You have a journey to go on.
Yeah.
So,
and then finally, during the midst of the duel that Rey has with Kylo Ren, when Kylo says that he will finish training her in the ways of the Force, and he mentions the Force, Rey immediately thinks back to the words that Maz said.
Exactly.
She closes her eyes, reaches out, connects with the light side of the Force, and is able to defeat Kylo.
Yeah,
thank you. There and survive to fight another day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which is interesting because if you think about it, at the end of A New Hope, right? Like Luke is, he's got his targeting computer up, but then he hears the voice of Ben, who kind mm-hmm. of guides him to trusting his feelings and using the Force. Maz is kind of in a similar way. There's a callback there, right? When she says the Force, which Maz has told her about earlier, that's when she's finally able to close her eyes and connect to it, as Maz kind of instructed.
And going even further back, when Anakin starts leaving the path by killing the Tusken Raiders in revenge for his mother's death, we hear Qui-Gon yelling through the Force in emotional torment and pain, and Yoda's the only one that can pick up on it at the time. Mm. So there, we get the callback of this call just reverberating throughout the life of those who followed the call. So
right, yeah, good point.
There we are. And that sort of brings it all back together.
There it is.
Man. I love it. That was great.
Yes.
All right.
Do we have time, Jason?
We have time to do a Larian inquiry, or basically one of your responses to The Force Awakens. We have a ton of these left, and so we're only going to do one. This is a little bit of a longer one, so we'll just break it up and we'll address a couple of paragraphs at a time here. This is going to be from Amanda, who emailed this in. Do you have it up, Carl, or just want me to read it?
Why don't you just read it? I don't have it up.
All right. Amanda says, "Thank the maker, I came across your podcast on my Twitter feed. I've been dying to vent a bit since seeing The Force Awakens. I've been a longtime fan of the expanded universe, and I started reading Young Jedi Knights when I was 14, and have read through The New Jedi Order, Legacy of the Force, and Fate of the Jedi. I was very hesitant about the new Star Wars movie when I heard that they wouldn't be touching EU material. I had been wishing for so long to see a movie with Jaina, Jason, and Anakin Solo, and Ben Skywalker. And Mara Jade, too. I was so disappointed, I was prepared going into the movie to be disappointed. I spent months wondering if I should even bother to go see it. But it's Star Wars, so how could I not? I told myself it would probably be a good movie, but not the one I was hoping for. How wrong I was. I absolutely loved it. There were a few things that irked me, but overall, I'm eagerly awaiting the next one. There were so many moments that called out to the EU for me. I loved it when Rey and Han were in the Falcon and were speaking in sync. Rey's mechanical inclination totally reminded me of Jaina Solo. There was the moment when Kylo killed Han, just like how Jason had to kill someone precious to him as part of his path to the dark side. And I love how conflicted and unstable Kylo appeared. It was as if the light really was battling with the dark inside him. I felt like that in the books that was happening with Jason as well. Did you want to address any of this before I continued, Carl?
I'm just saying everything so well, I don't know what to say.
All right. I will continue along with Amanda's email. She says, when Han mentioned how he and Leia had to do their own thing to cope with their son's betrayal, Han had to do his thing when Chewie died, and Leia was so understanding about it, of course referring back to the expanded universe. Mm-hmm. Another connection that she made. When Rey and Kylo dueled, it made me think of how Jaina eventually had to face her brother and kill him. In the movies, if the movies are leading towards a final confrontation between Kylo and Rey, it would be even more like the books if it turns out that Rey is related to the Skywalker family. By the way, I totally think that Rey is Luke's daughter. The moment she heard the voices and had that vision from the lightsaber, also when Maz asks Han who Rey is and the scene cuts away from them, I think there has to be a reason for that. Yes. I would agree with that, Amanda. She says, wow, I could really go on and on about how much I love this movie. BB-8 is freaking awesome, but I also want to point out a couple of things that bother me. One is how much Snoke reminds me of Palpatine. Do you want to, real quick, before we get into what bothers her, did you want to address some of the stuff that she liked?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's all fair point. You know, I'm excited to hear somebody who openly was, you know, obviously a big EU fan and was hesitant about this film, because obviously a lot of EU fans were really pissed with their decision to kind of just throw out our what has been canon for so long. You know, Jason, you and I have always been in the camp of like, we're okay with it. It's fine. You know, we like the EU. We'll always like now it's Legends. But you know, it's fine. Like, it makes sense. They did it sensibly. You know, you can't make new films when you have like 60 odd books that are going to dictate what you can do with your story. You know, that just doesn't make sense from a movie making standpoint. So I was fine with it. But I'm actually really glad that she wrote in, because I was curious how some of these more, you know, like the more hardcore EU fans would respond. And she may be, you know, I'm sure there are people in a different camp who are like, nope, that was stupid. Like, it sucks. You know, the EU's better. But it was, I think the reason I obviously she was able to get behind it so much is because there are so many similarities to the EU. And it is, right? Like, I mean, obviously Han and Leia's, one of their sons goes to the dark side. And his sibling has to confront him. And, you know, there are so many great comparisons without it being the exact same story, though, too. So I think, you know, because the EU went the way they thought it would go. Like, it's pretty clear at the end of Jedi, like, obviously Han and Leia are going to end up together. They'll probably have kids. You know, Luke's going to obviously start a new Jedi academy or temple or something, right? Like, Luke's going to continue on that line. And Force Awakens builds on all those fundamental elements of the EU that I think are essential, but it gives it a different flavor. It just goes a different route. That's all. Mm-hmm. I hope Rey is not Kylo's sister. I highly, highly, highly doubt that. Just the way Han and Leia interact with her, it just doesn't seem to make sense that would be the case. But I am really hoping that, obviously, just like you, Amanda, I think Jason, you as well, like, we're all hoping that she's Luke's daughter. So yeah, I mean, I'm really interested to see where it'll go from here. But it is cool that, you know, there was elements of the EU included. Without, I doubt it was intentional, but I highly doubt J.J. Abrams picked up the Fate of the Jedi series and read it or anything like that.
It's just one of those things where both the expanded universe and the sequel trilogy have the same place to build off from, and so you're going to get similar ideas and similar stories
exactly
in that, and it is nice to see that someone who much more of a fan of the expanded universe than either of us are, not that we aren't fans, but someone who is incredibly devoted to the expanded universe actually found those connections back to the expanded universe and enjoyed the movie because of it.
Yeah.
All right. Continue. She had just a couple of things that she that bothered her about the movie. One, she says, is how much Snoke reminds me of Palpatine. Made me wonder if Palpatine was into cloning in the movie-verse as he was in the books. The biggest beef that she has is with Ben Solo. I know using the name Jason would have been weird for non-EU people, but why would Han and Leia use the name Ben? Ben, Obi-Wan Kenobi, was so clearly more significant to Luke than he was to Leia. I get that the writers didn't want to use the name Jason, but why did it have to be Ben? They could have used any other name. Sorry if my thoughts like are Carl. Rambling and hard to understand. This movie has given me so much to speculate about. I'm happy and relieved and excited. And like I said, I can't wait for the next movie. So, there you go. Do you want to touch on these quibbles?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely wish they didn't name him Ben. I wish they would have named him Carl. I would have loved to hear Han Solo yell my name. Carl!
Carl!
No, I can definitely see that point. You know, that is interesting, right? Because there was a Ben Skywalker. Why choose Ben? You know.
And she does make a point. You know, Ben Kenobi, Obi-Wan.
Yeah, he doesn't have.
He's definitely much closer to Luke than ever to Leia.
Right. Now, my only guess is, and I might have said this on a previous episode, but the reason I mean, I don't mind it. I have no issue with it. You know, for non-EU people, they're not going to know that at all. They're not. It's going to be non-effective for them. But the only reason I like that his name is Ben is because maybe, you know, Luke was so close to Han and Leia when he was born that Luke in some way influenced his naming. Which I think would be, maybe I made this point on the Sarlacc pit when I was a guest, but I like that idea that maybe Luke was so close to Ben, and what would be so cool about that is it ups the tragedy of his fall, right? And makes it even more clear as to why Luke leaves. You know, I mean, think about it this way, you know, if he was there at his birth and Han and Leia are, you know, quibbling over what to name him, and Luke's like, well, what about Ben? You know, Ben Kenobi, he was there for
it
me.
It would probably be one of those things where Luke is there, you know, offering emotional support and everything, and Han and Leia still can't agree on a name, you know, 3 days after the baby's been born. And they finally just turn to Luke and say, what would you name him?
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I think it'd be really cool if Luke has some, you know, if that in some way ties Kylo ever closer to Luke. And think about it too. Like there's a tenacity with which Kylo is searching for that map. He wants to get to Luke, you know, very interesting, you know.
Yeah.
Just like Vader was in
the other possibility is maybe Leia has interacted with the Force ghost of Obi-Wan in the years between Return of the Jedi and Force Awakens. And so maybe she's gotten to build a relationship with Ben, with Obi-Wan. And then rather than naming him Obi-Wan, they named him Ben, you know, that sort of thing. I don't know. It's just another idea out there.
Right. And I'm sure, I mean, I probably didn't settle it down for you at all. You probably still just as annoyed, but, you know, maybe we'll find out more why in episode 8, why his name is Ben.
Yeah.
So
it obviously was intentional that they named him Ben.
Right.
So we'll see if they tell us why they named him Ben or not. But anyway. Thank you very much, Amanda, for emailing that in and for being a new Larian to join our little community here on the interwebs. So, all right. Before we wrap up, do we want to just let you guys know, obviously, we have a new poll, and this is going to be exciting because we want your thoughts on this. What one word would you use to describe The Force Awakens? And I'm really curious to see about this because we haven't had years and years and years to digest and analyze and pick apart The Force Awakens at this point, as we have had with the other films. So I'm really curious to see what people think. And guess what, Carl?
What?
We get to join in on the fun, too.
I am very excited.
Well, you are an exciting person. No. Anyways. But yeah, no, that's going to be fun. I'm really curious to see what we get because there are so many ideas and so many thoughts, so many opinions on this movie that I can't predict what kind of responses we're going to get.
I know, me neither. But yeah, I can't wait to think of my own response because I love The Force Awakens.
You're going to have like 5 words.
I'll figure it out.
You come up with an acronym?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. An acronym that's, you know, 38 were letters long. Yeah.
Carl, what does that mean? Well, give me 10 minutes.
Probably. Well, if they want to respond to that poll or anything else, where can they do that, Carl?
Over on Facebook, facebook.com/wampaslayerpodcast. Follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/wampaslayer, or shoot us an email at wampaslayerpodcast@gmail.com.
Excellent. And we're going to be starting something at the end of this episode, right, Carl?
Indeed we are. We've been putting this off, obviously, for a while. We finished Empire's radio drama a while back. But we're going to start Return of the Jedi radio drama at the end of this episode. So if you're interested in listening to that, please stick around after the episode for episode 1, Tatooine Haunts. This is the most interesting of the radio dramas because it's they lose Mark Hamill, which you will notice.
Yes.
And to me it's the weakest of the three. There's only, let me look real quick. Yeah, there's only 6 episodes. You know, A New Hope had like 13, Empire has like 9 or 10. It's only a 6. So it's a much quicker radio drama, but it's fun all the same.
Yeah. It is. It just, the most jarring thing about it is that it's somebody else playing Luke Skywalker.
Right. Which wouldn't be a big deal if it had been that same guy all 3 episodes or all 3 movies. I think it's just that you have Mark Hamill doing it for A New Hope and Empire, and now all of a sudden somebody new.
Right.
But you have the same Leia, Han, Anthony Daniels is back.
So. Billy D.
No, I don't know if he's in it. He might not be in it. I can't remember. We'll find out.
We will find out. I think that will wrap up this episode of the Wampus There podcast. This has been episode number 166, Crazy Old Wizards. And no, Carl and I aren't. but for Carl, I'm Jason, and we will see you next time here in the Wampa's Lair.
Star Wars: Return of the Jedi, Episode 1, Tatooine Haunts. A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away, there came a time of revolution, when rebels united to challenge a tyrannical empire. Since its defeats at Hoth and elsewhere, the Rebel Alliance has rallied to press the Empire hard. Interstellar war hangs in the balance, and all combatants feel that final, decisive battle draws near. Preparing himself for this moment, Luke Skywalker has trained tenaciously and undergone many trials in his efforts to become a Jedi Knight and learn the ways of the Force. Now he has returned to the desert planet Tatooine, where he was raised. It is here that Luke means to stake his life on an attempt to rescue his friend Han Solo from the clutches of the vile, slug-like gangster Jabba the Hutt. But before he is ready to face that challenge, or the greater perils that may lie beyond, he must finish one last task. So it is that the morning light of the planet's twin suns finds him in a hermit's dwelling, hard by the western Dune Sea.
Crystal alignment must be precise if the energy beam is to maintain its density. Hmm? No, R2, I don't need you. I was just reading out loud. Talking to myself, I guess. It's what old Ben used to do, too, sometimes. That's one of the reasons all the kids around Anchorhead thought he was a sunstruck hermit. Must be something about being back on Tatooine, back in his house. Brings out the crazy old wizard in me, too. If you're saying I can talk to you, R2, thanks. But at the moment, I need to work on this little project. The sooner I get it done, the better. If 3PO were here, I think he'd call this mindless tedium. Yeah, well, don't worry. We'll meet up with 3PO and the others soon enough. I had to come back to Ben's house to do this. I needed his tools and his books. And it completes the circle somehow. Adagan crystals are recommended for maximum density and purity. Yeah, well, I guess these will do. Okay, there. Almost. Got it. Go! Not again! R2, get that focal lens for me. It slid under the workbench. I'm sure you're giving me a lot of helpful advice, my little friend, but this is something I have to do on my own. I have to know that I'm ready for this. Ready for what lies ahead. Thanks. I don't know, R2. Maybe this can't be done. Give me the book, R2. Last try. Either I'm ready for this or I'm not. The concave surface of the focal lens must rest within a 2-degree arc of... What am I doing? I've read the instructions 12 times. And 12 times I've failed. Always with you, it cannot be done. Master Yoda, can I forget so soon? I don't need this. R2, hand me the superconductor. And now the power cell. And the crystals. There. It's done. Try not. Do or do not. There is no try. Here it goes.
Yes, my master. I have felt it.
Perhaps he should have been destroyed on Bespin. It is unlike you to fail in such matters, Vader.
He will not escape again. He can still be turned. I need only one more opportunity.
I have other work for you, my friend. Our efforts near the moon of Endor have fallen behind schedule. Use your particular talents to encourage the engineers to make haste. Impress upon them the importance of meeting my every expectation. You have my permission to make examples.
I shall leave at once, my master. As for Skywalker...
He is not your concern. He could be a powerful tool, Lord Vader, my tool, but only if he serves my purpose.
As you wish, my master.
Those who do not serve my ends, no matter how powerful they are, will be eliminated. Are we clear on this matter, Lord Vader?
We are clear.
Excellent. Leave at once for Endor, and wait for me there.
R2, wait for me. R2-D2, stop. I simply must rest for a moment. R2, you halt this very instant. That's more like it. You watch your language. Easy for you to say keep it in gear. You know full well that all this wretched sand is hard on more technologically evolved droids like myself. How could Master Luke have ordered us out into these murderous wastelands alone? Surely he doesn't expect us to rescue Captain Solo without assistance. Are you certain your electromagnetic field sensors are functioning correctly? Then where is this palace of Jabba the Hutt? There's nothing here but sand and rock. Building? What building? Oh. That is scarcely what I would call a palace, R2. It looks more like an iron foundry. Of course I'm worried. And you should be too. Lando Calrissian and poor Chewbacca never returned when they set out for that awful place. If I told you half the things I've heard about Jabba the Hutt, you'd probably short-circuit. Perhaps there's been some mistake. Ah, let me hear the message Master Luke gave you to convey to Jabba. Classified? I am Master Luke's most trusted confidant. I have no intention of arguing until my lubrication fittings clog up. Come along. Let's get this over with. What a forbidding place. R2, are you sure this is the right spot? Well, I don't see a comlink terminal. I'd better not, I suppose. Nobody home. Come along. We'd better leave right away and inform Master Luke. Goodness gracious me, a monitor arm. Mind it doesn't poke out your photoreceptor, R2. And you, kindly watch where you're swiveling your macro scanner.
Mind you, Binky.
R2 de Toa, C3PO, Tusta or Mishka Jabba do Hutt?
Good, you won't find the
Oh, how rude. It withdrew without even saying good day. I don't think they're going to let us in, R2. We'd better go. Oh. They're raising the portal. My goodness. It's very dark in there, isn't it? R2, wait! We're here for delicate negotiations. I really don't think we should rush into all this. R2, this is no time to be impetuous! Gracious, it's like a darkened tomb in here. Wait, what was that? Gamorrean guards! Oh, it would have to be those disgusting green ruffians. Just you deliver Master Luke's message so we can get out of here. Oh my, they're closing the portal again. Twi'lek? What Twi'lek?
Hey, Chuda, Musuk.
Yes, I realize we have arrived uninvited, sir. I presume you to be Bib Fortuna, Major Domo to Jabba the Hutt. I was told I would recognize you by your... That is, your magnificent cranial tentacles.
Diwana Wa.
Oh, dear. Diwana Wago. We bring a message for your master.
The Jabba Wanga.
That's right, Artu. And a gift. Gift? What gift?
The Jabba no bad. Is Ioto R2-D2-A.
Give you the gift and the message? I'm not sure if our master would approve of such a procedure. My counterpart says that our instructions are to give these things only to Jabba himself. In person.
The Chada Omoti. The Chada Tsugudi.
I'm terribly sorry. R2 is ever so stubborn about this sort of thing.
No Chada.
Jabba's audience chamber is that way. Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. Come along, R2. R2, I have a bad feeling about this. Oh, my stars. What an appalling scene. No, R2, I have never seen a more sinister and depraved crowd. think the rest of the galaxy safe, what with every thug, debauchered, and scofflaw having gathered here? Well, yes, Jabba the Hutt would be that huge, slug-like individual on the dais, but I do not recommend you address him that way.
Jabba, God, let no pass him, my lord.
Jabba, coming, sir, coming.
Poshuda!
Good morning, your magnitude. R2, play Master Luke's message for our host.
Greetings, Exalted One.
Oh.
Allow me to introduce myself. I am Luke Skywalker, Jedi Knight and friend to Captain Solo. I know you are powerful, mighty Jabba, and that your anger with Solo must be equally powerful. I seek an audience with your greatness to bargain for Solo's life. I'm sure that we can work out an arrangement which will be mutually beneficial and enable us to avoid any unpleasant confrontation. As a token of my goodwill, I present to you a gift. These two droids, R2-D2 and C-3PO.
What did he say?
Both are hardworking and will serve you well. I await your decision.
This can't be. R2, you played the wrong message.
Jabba must have fact what it were not is no Jedi.
There will be no bargain. We're doomed.
Beat your wangy kuchma. Don't let me do chunky droid.
Jabba declares that he will not give up his favorite wall decoration. He says he likes Captain Solo where he is. Oh, Artu, look! It's Captain Solo, still frozen in a slab of carbonite. Jabba is ordering them to take us into service. We are to be his slaves. Oh, no. There's no need for weapons. Artu, I do not agitate the Gamorreans. We will come quietly. Oh, dear. Right, I'm going. There's no need to shout. R2, stay close. Sent to the dungeons. What could possibly have come over our master? Could it be something I did? He never expressed any unhappiness with my work. Yes, I'm going. Where? To that door? Very well, since resistance is useless. Oh, mercy. It's something out of a droid's nightmare. Look, Artu. They're branding the soul of that poor little power droid's feet. May the Maker preserve us.
What have we here? You are a protocol droid, are you not?
I am C-3PO, human sight.
Yes or no will do.
Oh, in that case, yes.
How many languages do you speak?
I am fluent in over 6 million forms of communication and can...
Splendid. We have been without an interpreter since Jabba got angry with our last one and disintegrated him.
Disintegrated?
Other units he melts or feeds into the grinder unit. Guard, this protocol droid might be useful temporarily. Fitting with the restraining bolt to take him back up to His Excellency's main audience chamber.
R2, don't forsake me!
You're a feisty little one, but you'll soon learn respect. I have need for an R2 unit on Jabba's sail barge. You'll fill in nicely, or else.
This restraining bolt will cause me to short circuit before long, if I'm not trampled by one of these ruffians first. Oh, my. There's Boba Fett. Oh, what am I doing here? I'm sure I don't deserve such a horrible fate. If only R2 were with me. He's much better suited to this madness than I...
Hey, what were you stepping?
I'm terribly sorry, ma'am. All this boisterous behavior has quite upset my equilibrium.
Mm.
Oh, I see you are a dancing girl. I had no idea Jabba employed quite so many.
I'm his latest acquisition. I've heard the girls make a lot of money dancing here. At least the ones that survive till payday.
Well, I hope your salary is more generous than your costume, Miss...
You can call me Arika.
Oh, and I am C-3PO, human cyborg relations.
I saw the show you and that R2 unit put on. You used to belong to someone named Skywalker?
Indeed. And I'm sure there's been a grave mistake. Master Luke would never abandon us to this den of thieves. At least, I hope not.
So you think Skywalker really will come for you?
Now what?
Jabba's calling on one of his dancers. That's Ula. If you've never seen a Twi'lek female dance, you're in for a treat.
Yes, she's quite flexible.
She's Jabba's current favorite.
I suppose that must be why he keeps her chained to his throne.
Won't last. There's one dance she won't do for Jabba no matter how much he pays her.
Oh my! He's dragging her towards him by the chain. She won't have much choice now, I'm afraid.
She's putting up a good fight. From what I know of Jabba, he won't tolerate that for long.
He's activated some sort of trap door. That poor creature is falling in. Oh, is that a Rancor? Oh, how horrid! Won't somebody help her, Arika? Arika? Where has she got to? No, oh, I can't look! Oh, that poor creature. Go! Oh, someone's shooting! I'm right here, Your Enormity. Master Jabba demands to know who fired a weapon.
Eate, whoosh, Yoto.
Oh, preeminent Jabba, this interloper says that he is the bounty hunter Boosh. He states that he has come for the bounty on this Wookiee whom he brings before you in chains. Oh no! Chewbacca! Jabba proclaims, at last we have the mighty Chewbacca. The illustrious Jabba bids you welcome, Boosh, and will gladly pay you the reward of 25,000.
Yoto.
Boosh demands 50,000, no less. Please, Master, I'm only translating. But your voluminousness, why be angry at me? The mighty Jabba asks Boosh why Jabba must pay 50,000.
I, Yoto.
Boosh demands it because he's holding a thermal detonator! The awesome Jabba says that this bounty hunter is his kind of scum, fearless and inventive. The magnanimous Jabba therefore offers the sum of 35,000, and I do suggest you take it, Boosh.
Yato. Cha.
He agrees! The exalted Jabba commands that Chewbacca be taken to the dungeons. More's the pity. Major Domo Fortuna, it truly wasn't necessary to excruciate my circuits with a restraining bolt activator. But why are we all hiding back here behind the curtain? A surprise, Master Jabba, but how jolly. It's that bounty hunter, Boosh. But why is Boosh tampering with Captain Solo's carbonite slab? And why would he activate the mechanism to thaw Captain Solo? The carbonite is melting away, but his hands are moving. It's working. Captain Solo survived. He's alive. Shh.
Get me out of this thing. What happened to me?
No, don't try to stand up yet. Just relax for a moment. I freed you from the carbonite.
Something's wrong.
You have hibernation sickness.
I can't see.
Your eyesight will return in time.
Where am I?
In Jabba's palace.
Why are you hiding behind that helmet? Why'd you de-ice me? Who are you?
Someone who loves you, Han.
Leia.
Well, save your strength, Han. I've got to get you out of here. Are you strong enough to stand up?
Yeah, if it'll get me out of that big slug's filthy wallow. I know that laugh.
The Prestidigitary Jabba commands that the curtain be opened.
Jabba.
Jabba, Boba Fett, the whole sick crew, Han.
Jabba, look. I was just on my way to pay you back when I got a little sidetracked. It's not my fault.
Watch it, Connell. You'll be sure. Looking sorry, Nashbuck. Myron Biscachata. Winakombando.
This will be bad for business, Jabba. Look, why can't we just sit down and straighten it all out?
After me, sir.
The dungeons have never...
Jabba, I'll pay you a trip. All right, let me go. Jabba, you're throwing away a fortune. Don't be a fool, Jabba. I'm on the level this time.
Jabba further commands that the Princess Leia be brought to him.
I'm warning you, Jabba. We have powerful friends. You're gonna regret this.
The voluptuary Jabba is unworried. He observes that the Princess Leia Organa looks... looks good enough to eat.
Oh, get that tongue off me! You're repulsive, hot, degenerate!
I can't bear to watch. How could Master Luke allow it to come to this? It's the end of us all.
The rebels haven't known so dire a moment since the disaster at Cloud City. But out on the endless dunes of Tatooine, a lone figure walks. One solitary, unarmed knight, moving inexorably towards an appointed reckoning in the palace of Jabba the Hutt. Star Wars: Return of the Jedi by Brian Daley. Based on characters and situations created by George Lucas and on the screenplay by Lawrence Kasdan and George Lucas. Additional material by John Whitman. Featured in the cast were Anthony Daniels as C-3PO, Edward Asner as Jabba the Hutt,
Samantha Bennett as Arika, David Dukes as Bib Fortuna, Joshua Farden as Luke Skywalker, Paul Hecht as the Emperor, Perry King as Han Solo, Brock Peters as Darth Vader, Anne Sachs as Princess Leia, and Yardley Smith as 99. This is Ken Hiller. Star Wars: Return of the Jedi was directed by John Madden and produced by Tom Vagley. The co-producer was Julie Hartley. Sound design for Lucasfilm by Ben Burt. Music by John Williams. Post-production was realized with assistance from Tom Mudge and John Scherf by Tom Vagley. Star Wars: Return of the Jedi was produced by Highbridge Audio in association with Tom Vagley Productions and LA Theater Works, and with the cooperation of Lucasfilm Limited.